All right, everybody, welcome to this episode of the CASA Connection here at CASA Shaw. I am Jeff Warren.
I am Tracy Heisler, Executive Director for CASA Shaw.
It is great to be in your ears talking about the world of foster care, and this is part two of us talking about ACEs and trauma. We're going to get into some practical applications here on this particular episode. We're going to talk about some stories here. Tracy is a veteran. Of ACEs, I should say, right? Are you a veteran of ACEs?
I am a veteran of ACEs.
I think there are so many of us that are actually veterans of ACEs that there are folks out there that don't realize they're veterans of ACEs.
That is true. That is true. And that's one of the reasons that we think it's really important to raise awareness.
Absolutely.
Because I'll tell you, having done this for many years now, I can see points in my professional career where I've done harm to someone because I didn't understand what it was I was seeing. And learning about ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, for those of you who are sitting there going, what are ACEs? Are they gambling? Are they going to Vegas? What's happening? That really has been transformational in the way that I've done my work.
You've been very passionate about the work you've done over so many years and decades with regard to foster care. And as we were talking about on the previous episode, if you haven't listened to it yet, I would highly recommend you go back in the podcast feed, listen to that, because it was only 6 years ago, Tracy, that you really started to understand what ACEs was, how it affects children, and then how it manifests itself later in life in terms of behaviors. So with that being said, it was only somebody as dedicated as you to the world of foster care. It's only been 6 years for you. It's only been 4 years for me working here at this CASA program. Getting the word out about ACEs is really important, but also talking about the practical applications of ACEs and trauma as well is also going to be very important. That's what we're going to be concentrating on during this particular podcast.
For sure. And one of the things that we see is oftentimes the intergenerational applications that result from adverse childhood experiences. You know, we say here, traumatized children grow up to be traumatized adults who raise more traumatized children.
They call it the cycle, right?
And unless that cycle is interrupted.
Yeah.
And one of the things, I mean, and we long have known in child welfare that there is an intergenerational cycle, but what we didn't understand was the brain science behind that. It's not just a learned behavior, it actually changes the wiring of your brain.
Absolutely.
And makes that fight, flight, or freeze part of your brain, that defense mechanism, much more pronounced and have an oversized influence on how your brain works. And some of the ways that we've seen this practically for kids in care, one significant one is education. When kids are repeatedly exposed to abuse and neglect, one of the ways that they protect themselves is to become scanners.
Yeah.
They are constantly scanning the room, looking for who is safe, who is not safe. Are there threats coming for me? And when you are so busy in that self-protection mode, it makes it really difficult to do things like algebraic equations, to read and comprehend a paragraph.
Do an art project. Yeah.
You know? So recognizing that there's a dual process going on for these kids and then wondering why they're struggling in school, there's a reason that their learning is impaired. One of the ways that we can address that is by making them feel safe.
Right.
And that speaks to how do we... what's the tenor of our voice? How do we respond when they are misbehaving? How are we targeting inadvertently? You know,
right.
We have these target kids who just annoy the mess out of us because they are misbehaving, instead of recognizing that it could be that they are feeling threatened and unsafe. We're attributing that they are disruptive, that they're bad kids, you know, putting labels on them. And instead of creating an environment where they can thrive and feel safe.
Right. And you think about the foster care world. What is the worst thing to happen to a child in foster care? Aside from, of course, the abuse and neglect. But inevitably, at the end of the day, it's being removed from that home. That in itself is incredibly, incredibly traumatic. Yes, the child may be physically or mentally abused to whatever extent. But that removal from a biological parent is so incredibly traumatizing to children. And I think it's important for folks to realize that.
And that was something I didn't understand. I remember a case that I had with five kids, same dad, three or four different moms. And I was certain that there was a lot going on in that house that was dangerous for the kids. And I had asked for them to be removed. And it took a while. The judge finally agreed. He asked me to go on the removal with the caseworker and law enforcement. And I was in tears. The caseworker was in tears.
I think you mentioned this on a previous show.
The kids were just incredibly traumatized by the removal. And there had been things going on, but...
But at the end of the day,
it was awful. It shook all of us.
Yeah.
And it gave me a healthy respect for... what we ask of children when they are removed and put into foster care. And that's another place where we see this trauma manifest. So within the world of foster care, we talk about the honeymoon period.
Yes.
It's about 2 weeks after kids are placed. They're usually on really good behavior. Everything seems to be settling in. They're following the rules. But part of that is because they're terrified.
Right.
They don't know you. They don't know if you're safe. They don't know what's happening. And so they're trying their level best to not ruffle any feathers.
Right.
It's when they feel safe that you start to see these negative behaviors. And how do we respond? Get a new placement.
Exactly.
Take them out of my house.
Right.
And I say that as somebody who is a therapeutic foster parent, where I had a child who was 13 and it was a nightmare. And I remember... You know, trying to drag her up the stairs while I was on the phone with her caseworker screaming, come get her now.
Yeah.
Get her now. Because she'd hurt several of my kids. She had really inappropriate behaviors. She wasn't listening. And I completely re-traumatized that child because I didn't understand what I was seeing in the behaviors that she was expressing.
It goes back to one of the social media posts that we've put up every now and then. It's that we try to get this message out, Tracy, where it's from the parent perspective, I'm sorry, the resource parent perspective, and then the child perspective, where the resource parent says, oh, it's been a couple weeks, now the child is acting out. And then below that, the child is saying, I feel safe. Now I'm able to actually feel comfortable where I am at right now.
Exactly.
And that's the reality here.
And if you can't ride out that rocky period as they're, you know, it's a bad setup for everyone.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I know you have some stories too that you wanted to kind of get into, you know, before we talk to some members of our staff as well, just about these practical applications with regard to trauma and ACEs as well. Do you want to get into any of those particular stories?
I'll just share a few with you, because I do think it's important to recognize where these behaviors come from.
Absolutely.
So there was a mom in one of my cases years ago, and when her fight, flight, or freeze was activated, it was always fight.
Yeah.
And she was constantly burning every bridge down. She's the only parent who ever threatened me in my, you know, 30 plus years of doing this work. She was completely out of control. Looking in hindsight now, I can see that she was likely more of a traumatized adult than she was an abusive adult.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So much of
makes
her
sense.
Issues were around substance abuse. I went on a home visit. She was higher than a kite, slurring her words.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly she'd been using, and I had to report that. But as we talked about in the previous episode, so much of this drug and alcohol abuse comes from trauma backgrounds. And I never took the time to say, hey, what happened to you?
Right.
And I should have, to find out, you know, where that foundation was and tried to get more services for her, more victim services for her.
Yeah.
But everybody kept a wide berth because she'd just bite you at the drop of a hat, you know?
Right.
And it made it hard to help her when so much of her response was aggressive.
I think it's also important for us to realize, as we talk about trauma and we talk about ACEs too, that there's no quick fix. It's not an easy type of road to even understanding how to like implement practical application, like how to implement a new way of thinking and even understanding too. And I think that's something we need to realize as well.
Agreed. And I, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about trauma was because I think it's important for us just as regular people. We all know someone
yes.
who is mm-hmm. super touchy, who gets offended really easy, who feels very defensive.
How quickly. Many family members, huh?
Right. We all know people who drink too much right. or who use yes. drugs. We all know people who eat too much and are overweight. We all know people who have mental health issues and anxiety and depression. We don't know their story necessarily, right. even if you think you do.
Right.
You may not know their story.
Right.
And I think one of the beautiful things about learning about ACEs is the grace that it can give to another human. It doesn't mean you excuse the behavior. It's
right.
not okay to, you know, be high and neglect your kids, but it can help, hopefully, give us a little more kindness and empathy and support for people who need help, because clearly these are behaviors that are born out of a need for something, whether it's feeling safe, whether it's unresolved trauma, whether it's a sense of sadness or poor self-esteem. So much of it has roots in ACEs. I worked as a therapist in a jail and on the mental health unit, and I talked to people from embezzlers to murderers, and the commonality between virtually every person I spoke with, they'd had incredibly traumatizing childhoods.
It goes to the tagline that National CASA has, change a child's story. How do you do that? By really kind of getting in the weeds and understanding at the end of the day. And Tracy, I think too that by learning more about ACEs, learning more about trauma, for me, and I think for other individuals as well, we start to realize that the world just isn't black and white. How at times we were taught growing up,
how
there's
true
a lot of gray.
That is.
There is a lot of gray, folks.
And how I think true that is.
We need to really keep that in mind as well. The world is just not black and white when it comes to the world of foster care, when it comes to ACEs, when it comes to trauma. We need to realize that gray that is there and embrace it to an extent so that we can begin healing.
Right. And that's the other point that we haven't talked about yet. But I do think that we need to recognize that there is hope.
There is.
Just because you've yep. had these adverse experiences, you've had these struggles, you suffer with all of these, the fallout that comes from it.
Yeah.
There are things that we can do to help mitigate those symptoms. We can't change the experience, but we can retrain the brain to respond in a more appropriate way. There's a really great video, and if you send me an email at info@casashaw.org, I'll send you the link for it. But it's a little video clip that explains the physiology behind what we see and how to better regulate it.
Yeah. We've seen countless, really, success stories in regards to what you're talking about, you know, where people have retrained their brains, you know, whether they are videos on YouTube, whether they're some of
yoga, meditation,
exactly,
art,
exactly,
exercise.
There's a particular individual who's affiliated with this CASA program who was a foster child and now is a parent herself. And she's basically a CASA ambassador for us here. And she's gone through that transformation, retrained her brain to a certain mm-hmm. extent.
Yep.
And she is a very successful, thriving lady her own family. And it's wonderful to see.
And I introduced her to ACEs and
you
gave
did.
Her the training.
You did. Yes, you did. Another important aspect of ACEs and even trauma, I think in particular, Tracy, that I just wanted to touch on, and I never realized it until I came to this CASA program, is resiliency. And the resiliency gene, actually, that from a scientific standpoint has been really looked at and dived into a lot more, not realizing, wow, there are certain of us that really have the ability to be resilient in traumatic type of situations. And then there are some that do not have that resiliency to really get through it and understand what's happened to them.
It's a definite interplay between nature and nurture,
yeah.
for sure. And
yeah.
if you're out there and you think, wow, that's interesting, Google orchids and dandelions and resilience.
Okay.
And there's a great article about how some kids are orchids and some kids are dandelions, ones who need a lot of support and care to thrive, and then others who just are like the weeds that come out of the sidewalk.
Right. <so. laughs> Well, we are going to talk to a member of our staff here in just a bit. But before we do that, again, folks, get in touch with Tracy if you would like to. If you would like any resources concerning trauma or ACEs, info@casashaw.org. I know she said that email address earlier here in this episode, but also feel free to follow us on Twitter @Casa_Shaw. Same handle for Instagram as well. Follow us over there @Casa_Shaw. We would appreciate that. You could like our Facebook page. Just search us out there as well. And you can always head on over to our website, casashaw.org, to check out everything we have going on here within our CASA program. Tracy, anything else before we head out here?
No, just enjoy the day. We don't know how many we have, right?
There you
so
go.
Get out there and, you know, eat the ice cream today.
There you go. We are going to talk with one of our staff members in just a bit here. Stay tuned for it. Right now, we are with Cynthia Jagnandan, one of our case supervisors here at CASA Shaw. Thanks so much for joining us, Cynthia.
My pleasure. Good morning, Jeff.
It is great to have you here to talk specifically about trauma and about how trauma impacts the cases that we particularly handle here at CASA of Somerset, Hunterdon, and Warren counties. When you look at cases, Cynthia, and how trauma has impacted the kids and families that we serve, you know, what really stands out for you in terms of the trauma within families itself? I mean, what do you think in terms of, you know, what that kind of looks like? I know Tracy and I, we talked about substance abuse. We talked about just the cycle of domestic violence as well. What are your thoughts on what just stands out to you in terms of trauma within the family structure itself with those we serve?
Yeah, so I'm a supervisor for Warren County, and I can say that for my caseload, substance abuse and addiction are directly responsible for about 75 or 80% of the removals and of the children that we serve. It's really disheartening to see the cycle of trauma that is played out, as we see that so many of the parents of the children that we're serving have a history with the division themselves.
Right.
So you clearly see this cycle that's not being broken.
It continues to perpetuate itself. And again, you know, we do see a lot of substance abuse and the trauma that is caused based on substance abuse. And I think what's also important, especially for our listeners, who really may be, there may be individuals who may be new to this subject matter, substance abuse isn't always something that you can just simply say, okay, I'm just not going to be doing this anymore. Addiction runs strong in many families. We see it constantly within our CASA cases where addiction is an issue that needs to be addressed. We try to help in many ways, and we try to help those children inevitably who are the victims of that. But it's not as simple as just saying, okay, we're not going to, don't do drugs. Don't yeah. drink alcohol. Alcoholism, drug addiction, addiction itself, I think, is something that really needs to be looked at more when it comes to the foster care system.
Absolutely. And our society in general just, yeah. you know, hasn't really found an effective way yet to deal with it. All of our interventions so far, you know, have been effective for only a limited number of people.
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely affecting our children.
How have we here at CASA been able to gauge trauma when it comes to our CASA kids and our families? I mean, of course, we have proactive trainings that we do. We try to educate our collective community, whether it's through schools, whether it's through law enforcement, just our CASAs in general. Again, you know, how have you seen us proactively gauge this issue of trauma here at CASA Shaw?
Yeah, so every one of our CASA volunteers receives a lot of training about trauma. So they're all trauma informed. And when they go into their case and they're working with the kids, they're working with the school, the teachers, they are bringing that trauma-informed lens to say, what is happening in this child's life that might be caused by trauma?
Yeah.
And what's the most effective way to deal with that?
I think one of the best things that our CASAs can do to help gauge trauma, especially for children who are having enough challenges when it comes to schooling is that ability to talk to the school counselor, the ability to talk to the leadership at the school, because we're able to then get that child a 504 plan if needed, an IEP if needed. And I think that CASAs in general can really help from an educational standpoint. And at the end of the day, I think that's what a lot of our foster kids that are in care really need in terms of a foundation is an educational foundation.
Absolutely. And educational advocacy is really at the heart of what we do. So many of the things that the schools are seeing, whether it's oppositional defiant disorder, ADD, ADHD, they're starting to be looked at by a lot of professionals now through a more trauma-informed lens. And seeing how much these things are related to trauma.
Yeah.
So even though we can't share details about the child's life and what they've experienced, we can, you know, inform the school about why these things might be happening for kids in a general sense.
Have you been able to see with your specific case, and of course, confidentiality, you know, we're not going to get into like specific cases, but in a more general sense, have you been able to see where the advocacy from a CASA has, from a schooling perspective, has really made the difference in a child's life?
Yes. Yeah, so even though it's not typical, some of our cases do go on for several years where we're working with the child.
Yeah.
That can happen, especially with adolescents. They may be transitioning from foster homes to group homes. And what can happen there is that they really don't have that quote unquote educational parent that is looking out for their best interests
yeah.
throughout their years in the educational system. We do have one CASA advocate that has actually been appointed as an educational surrogate to take on that parent role. And we've actually done a little bit more training about that that Jeff can tell you more about. But it has really made a huge difference in this young adult's life, going from really not doing well in school to getting to where he really can shine and show his true ability.
Absolutely. And what Cynthia was just talking about there is our recent CASA Cafe that we did on educational advocacy within the foster care system. If you head on over to our YouTube channel, just go to YouTube and search CASA Shaw, and it's one of the first videos that'll come up. CASA Cafe, close to an hour long. It's great for CASAs who need some in-service time if you are listening to us in other parts of the country. Anything else, Cynthia, that you want to get into in terms of trauma and just how we're gauging it here at CASA?
Sure. Well, this can all be a real sad topic to talk about, right? And
not too many lollipops and rainbows.
No. And you know, one thing we talk about with trauma is resilience. Some people seem to have resilience, and some people don't.
Right.
And I think one thing that's we can take out of this is that there's a lot of factors that we can influence that can increase resilience, whether it's creating connections within the community and making sure that a child has one adult that they know is appropriate and is always going to be there for them. Sometimes that person could be a CASA. Sometimes it could be a person that a CASA connects them with, or a person that CASA makes sure that they have visitation with, even though they're in a foster home. So that, I think, is one of the most important things we can do at CASA.
Cynthia Jagnandan, one of our case supervisors here at CASA Shaw, thank you so much for joining us. Very much appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jeff.
That's going to do it for this episode of the CASA Connection here at CASA Shaw. Again, make sure you're following us on the interwebs out there. You can go over to casashaw.org. That's our website. We've got a lot of great resources on our site and also on social media. You can like our Facebook page. We're on Instagram and Twitter, both at @CASA_Shaw. And we are looking forward to being in your ears on the next episode. Take care, everyone.